the Albert Mohler Program, your place for intelligent Christian conversation about the issues that matter. Dr. Mohler is president of the Southern Baptist Theological Seminary and one of the nation's leading theologians and cultural commentators. To get online with Dr. Mohler, call toll-free nationwide, 1-877-893-TALK. That's 1-877-893-8255. Now, here's your host, Dr. Albert Mohler.
Hello, America. Welcome to the Albert Mohler Program. We'll be talking today about the lost tomb of Jesus. You've no doubt heard about it. I was on Larry King Live with several others last night talking about it. It is one of those kind of sensationalistic stories that seems to be sweeping the media right now, and it has a lot to do with the fact that about this time of the year, a story like this seems always to break. Always, just about Easter and just about Christmas, you can count on a news story coming out suggesting some scandalous new take on the life and ministry and meaning of Jesus. We shouldn't be surprised. We should really kind of buckle our seatbelts this time of the season and just prepare ourselves for this to happen. But even behind that context and with all that in light, I just simply have to tell you that this is one of the worst of these. It is one of the ones that comes with the flimsiest evidence. And yet is taken seriously, partly at least, I think, because the executive producer of this Discovery Channel program, The Lost Tomb of Jesus, is James Cameron, who was the producer of the Academy Award-winning film The Titanic. And that has given some credibility to this. But this is just another reminder. Well, let me just put it this way. If you want to get your theology and you want to get your archaeology and biblical studies from the producer of Titanic, this is your film. This is your documentary. Going to be Sunday night on the Discovery Channel. We're going to be talking about it today. I've had so many people who've mailed in, asked questions about it, so many people who've called. I've been spending a great deal of my day today doing media interviews, not only here in the United States, but I was just talking with a major newspaper in Poland, a reporter there just a few minutes ago. All that to say, the world's talking about it. We're going to be talking about it today on the Albert Mohler Program. The phone number, 877-893-8255. That's 877-893-TALK. We'll get to it in just a moment. Let me just tell you that one of the interesting things we have in the background here that we've been talking about is the popularity of these books pushing atheism. This is something relatively new in terms of American culture, this kind of visibility given to atheism, and yet it's something that we really shouldn't find all that surprising because there are developments in the culture that seem to be sometimes just kind of fueling each other. And one of the things that is fueling this interest in atheism right now is the fact that booksellers have discovered that this is something that just might sell. There just might be a commercial angle to this. The magazine of the secular humanist organization known as Free Inquiry ran an editorial on this. Paul Kurtz, writing about this, said that the public has been bombarded by pro-religious propaganda from time immemorial. Today it comes from pulpits across the land, TV ministries, political hucksters, and best-selling books. Indeed, at the present moment, the apocalyptic Left Behind series, co-authored by evangelist Tim LaHaye, is an all-time blockbuster. Other bestsellers include The Purpose-Driven Life by Rick Warren and a slew of books attacking liberal secularists and humanists by religious conservatives such as Ann Coulter and Bill O'Reilly. Let's be fair. Until now, it has been virtually impossible to get a fair hearing for critical comment upon uncontested religious claims. It was considered impolite and bad taste, and it threatened to raise doubts about God's existence or hegemony. I've often said that it is as if an iron curtain had descended within America, for skeptics have discovered that the critical examination of religion has been virtually verboten, that is, German for forbidden. Well, I read that, and by the way, this is in the issue that is on the newsstands right now, dated February, March 2007. You have to wonder, you know, did he write this 20 years ago and just decide to publish it now? Because you go in the bookstores today, what do you find? You find Sam Harris's book, Daniel Dennett's book, Richard Dawkins' book on the bestseller list. Richard Dawkins' book has been on the bestseller list for most of the last, say, 30 weeks in this country. That tells you something. The responses to the Richard Dawkins book have been pretty dismissive, rightfully so, of its theological and philosophical claims. I wrote a major review. Several others have written reviews. We've been talking about it on this program. I've written at least a dozen different articles on my website about Richard Dawkins, who is probably the world's best-known atheist right now, and his attack upon Christianity. But Alvin Plantinga has now jumped in the argument, and this is a big one. Alvin Plantinga is the John A. O'Brien Professor of Philosophy at the University of Notre Dame. He is teaching at a Catholic institution, although he himself is a Reformed theologian and philosopher. Alvin Plantinga is the biggest of big guns in philosophy today. He is certainly the most influential Christian philosopher living today, and he's published his review of Richard Dawkins' book in the current issue of Books and Culture, published by Christianity Today magazine. Now, you're just going to love what I'm going to read to you here. This is the killer paragraph, and this is one of those paragraphs you read, and you just know if you're on the other side of this kind of attack and this kind of critique, it's going to be hard to survive. Listen to what he says. Now, despite the fact that this book is mainly philosophy, Dawkins is not a philosopher. He's a biologist. Even taking this into account, however, much of the philosophy he purveys is at best jejune. You might say that some of his forays into philosophy are at best sophomoric, but that would be unfair to sophomores. The fact is, grade inflation aside, many of his arguments would receive a failing grade in a sophomore philosophy class. This, combined with the arrogant, smarter-than-thou tone of the book, can be annoying. I shall put irritation aside, however, and do my best to take Dawkins' main argument seriously. End quote. Ouch. Okay, that really hurts you. You just have to understand that when a paragraph like that is written, when Alvin Plantinga, the world's most influential Christian philosopher, says you're not a philosopher, guess what? You're not a philosopher. You just got told. And he says this to Richard Dawkins. He puts Dawkins in his place as a biologist. He says, look, as a biologist, he's got a lot to say about biology. But that doesn't mean he has any expertise or credibility whatsoever in talking about theology and philosophy. My favorite line in the whole thing is where he says, you know, I would call his philosophical attempt sophomoric, but that would be an insult to sophomores. Now, by the way, Plantinga rightly points to the naturalism, the worldview of naturalism that is central to Richard Dawkins' thesis, and says that's the main problem. And he says Dawkins is so committed to his naturalism that he doesn't even see where this inevitably leads. In the very beginning of his article, he said Richard Dawkins has declared himself the sworn enemy of God. Let's hope for his sake that God does not return the favor. And we do have to hope that. It's another reminder that this is not just a battle of ideas, this is a spiritual battle. It's a reminder to us that we should not be only ready to give an answer to the challenge posed intellectually by someone like Richard Dawkins, but we should also pray for him. We should pray not just that his mind would be changed, but that his soul would be completely changed, transformed by the saving knowledge of the Lord Jesus Christ. That will involve his mind, it will involve his heart, it will involve his will, it will involve everything and every part of who he is. But you also have to understand that when one sets himself to this kind of obstinate opposition, even to the idea of belief in God, and commits himself to such an extreme form of naturalism, you're going to know that something significant has happened if there's even the slightest crack in this very hardline atheism. Speaking of a hard line, that's what many researchers are now taking. A new book and study that is coming out from a researcher at San Diego State University, a psychologist in this case, is looking at Generation Y. Now, just in case you're following in alphabetical order, this is the generation that follows X. So right now you're talking about young adults who are just about college age and a little bit older. Gene Twenge, an associate professor at San Diego State University and lead author of the report, says that this generation, sometimes known as the millennials, sometimes known as Generation Y, may be the most narcissistic, that is, the most self-centered and self-loving generation in American history. This is a report published today in the Los Angeles Times. The study that she conducted found that almost two-thirds of recent college students had narcissism scores on psychological tests that were above the average 1982 score. 30% more college students showed elevated narcissism in 2006 than in 1982. Now, this particular study looks at Generation Y and asks the question, why would this generation be so narcissistic? I want to suggest to you that we should instead consider this generation to be just an exceedingly representative picture of the American culture as a whole. It just so happens that this particular generation, it has not been around long enough to feel guilty for this kind of narcissism. I'll tell you the truth. My guess is that regardless of these kind of psychological inventories, human nature hasn't changed all that much. The inclination towards narcissism and self-love is a constant going all the way back to Adam and Eve and the serpent in the garden. But there have always been controls on this. At least people felt guilty about their narcissism and perhaps even felt that they ought to grow out of it. I think what makes this particular study and this particular generation somewhat different is that given the MySpace, YouTube, and narcissistic culture that they have come to expect, It may be that this generation really doesn't see the need to grow out of this. It may be that some of the controls are off. Some of the limiting factors about narcissism are simply missing in our current cultural climate. And thus, they feel fully empowered to continue their narcissism on into the future. Now, here's the question. What kind of children are they going to raise? It's really hard to raise children if you think it's all about you. A baby doesn't buy that. We're going to be talking about the lost tomb of Jesus, and we're going to be looking at why this particular scandal, this sensationalistic story, gives us a little picture into what's really going on in the media and in popular culture when it comes to Jesus. The phone number to join the conversation is 877-893-8255. I'm Albert Mohler. Welcome back. So I hold in my hand the book, The Jesus Family Tomb. Folks, you got to take a look at this. I don't mean actually look at the book. You got to look at the issue. Because in looking at this issue, as we're going to see, it tells you a whole lot about what's going on in America, American popular culture, and the American media when it comes to Jesus. And just look at the slew of books just over the last couple of years. The Jesus Dynasty by James Tabor. All the stuff about the Gnostic Gospels and the stuff that's coming out. And now The Jesus Family Tomb. Of course, this is tied to the Discovery Channel special that will be on Sunday entitled The Lost Tomb of Jesus. It is produced by James Cameron, the producer of Titanic, the largest grossing movie of all time. And again, my bottom line on this is if you want archaeology, theology, and biblical studies done by the director of the Titanic, this is going to be your film. It is also by Simka Jakubowicz, and also you have the book by Simka Jakubowicz and Charles Pellegrino. And thus, if you're looking at the material, the book is entitled The Jesus Family Tomb. The TV special is entitled The Lost Tomb of Jesus. And the thesis is this. Supposedly in 1980, a tomb was found in the area of Jerusalem that included ossuaries, that is, stone boxes meant to hold bones, kind of like what we would now have as caskets. And these ossuaries had names on them by inscription, and the names include Jesus. Supposedly what's written on this particular ossuary is the name Jesus, son of Joseph. Also, you have a Mary, a Miriam. You have also what they claim to be a Yose, which would be short for Joseph. You have names that, according to the authors of this book and the makers of this documentary, supposedly would indicate by statistical study that this would be the tomb of Jesus of Nazareth. Now, they also bring in all kinds of other stuff. They use what they consider to be their clincher proof in the form of a statistical survey of the distribution of names. And then they throw in what they consider to be something that will sound very much attuned to the ears of the CSI kind of audience, and that's DNA. They throw in those magic letters, DNA. It's supposed to prove something, right? You know what the DNA proves? The DNA proves that two of the people in this tomb aren't related to each other. That's all the DNA proves. But when you put this all together in a conspiracy theory, in order to prove supposedly that this is the tomb of Jesus and his family, what you do is you go around connecting dots where you can't draw a straight line. You know, when I was in high school, all the stuff was really ablaze about the Bermuda Triangle. I grew up in South Florida, which, by the way, is right adjacent to the Bermuda Triangle. One of the questions was, what happened to the Avengers squadron that went down, there in the Atlantic just in the World War II period? What happened to all these ships that disappeared and all the rest? And there were all these books out on the Bermuda Triangle. And you know, the way these conspiracy theories of the kind of paranormal and all the rest work is you start looking at things and you say, well, what other explanation could there be? If we don't have the obvious reason why this happened, why this ship disappeared or why this Avenger squadron disappeared, then what we'll do is we'll say, well, it could have been this. And then we'll put all these cases together as if they share in common the same unavoidable conclusion. It has to be that there's some kind of supernatural, abnormal, paranormal, not yet understood force field or something there in this region known as the Bermuda Triangle that is sucking these kind of things down. Maybe it's a giant magnetic force that is sucking airplanes and ships off the surface of the sea and out of the air. And what other explanation could there be? And you know, when you're 16 and you're reading that stuff, you're about ready to play that mental game. Well, what other explanation could there be? Well, in reality, there are probably a million different explanations, and the phenomena probably don't even belong together. One ship probably went down because it ran into another ship. One ship probably went down because it capsized in a storm. They're probably unrelated, but not if you're determined to put it together as a conspiracy theory. What you have with James Cameron and Cynka Jakubowicz, and also Jakubowicz and his co-author Charles Pellegrino in the book, what you have is an attempt to do just this, but it's not about ships and planes over the Bermuda Triangle. It's about the bones of Jesus. Now, in so doing, they really reveal some things that, well, even in this age, did shock me. On Larry King Live last night, I faced off against Mr. Cameron and Mr. Jakubowicz, and what they had to say was nothing less than shocking. I want you to hear just a little bit of their own words.
Frankly, even if you said it's 2-1 that possible that this is the tomb of Jesus of Nazareth, we would have a duty to report it.
All right,
we're reporters. That's all we're doing. We're reporting the statistics, the archaeology, and the patina, the DNA, and people should, frankly, watch the film, read the book before they already decide. First the questions, then the answers, way around.
Okay, you heard Larry King there speaking with Cynka Jakubowicz. And you heard what Mr. Jakubowicz had to say. We're just reporters. We're just telling a story. Well, let's puncture that little balloon right quick. They are selling a story. This is a commercial product. They were selling a story to the Discovery Channel. They were getting several different networks, including the Discovery Channel, networks in Europe and in Great Britain, to put money into this. It is a commercial product. Reporters who are genuinely reporting a story, call some kind of press conference, or they publish a story, or they get it out, they publish in a scholarly journal. You're not talking about that here. This is sensationalism made for television. And when they say that we're just reporters, well, just buckle your seatbelts, because what follows is likely to be, a made-for-television movie. Let's just put it that way. He had something else to say. Let's play clip 19.
The question of a bodily ascension, from what I understand, is a problem. But most Christians believe in a spiritual ascension and a physical resurrection. We're not in the theology business. All we're doing here is we're reporting the news.
All we're doing is reporting the news. We're not in the theology business. Well, that's clear. That's absolutely clear. But guess what? If you're going to claim to be a reporter, putting together a credible documentary having to do with Jesus, you better at least bring someone who is a theologian into it to tell you where you're about to make yourself look like a fool. As Mr. Jakubowicz did right then, suggesting that most Christians believe, you heard him, in a physical resurrection, but in a spiritual ascension. You even heard Mr. King come back and say, I think Catholics believe in a physical ascension. Well, Mr. King, you're right. The only thing that you need to add to that is all Christians who base their understanding of the life and ministry of Jesus on the Gospels understand we're talking about a physical ascension. Now, even Mr. Jakubowicz admits that if you do believe in a physical ascension, you've got a problem with this tomb, because they claim that in this tomb are the bones of Jesus. Let me just give you a quick rundown on why you should consider this particular thesis, this particular documentary, to be more or less a thinly disguised flim-flam operation. Number one, Jesus comes from a family line through his mother, but also through Joseph, who reared him as a son, that is associated with the cities, and use the word city here is really an exaggeration, with the towns and villages of Nazareth and Bethlehem, not Jerusalem. The Jewish tradition is that the tomb is where your ancestors are. Also, you're talking about a very poor family, and here you're talking about a very wealthy grave. Now, you just start looking at all this and putting it together, and you realize that what these folks are doing is trying to put together a conspiracy theory in order to suggest that here, right under the noses of all these generations in Jerusalem, was the burial place of Jesus of Nazareth. Of course, they're suggesting that means that his bones are there. They're also suggesting that he was married to Mary Magdalene, and that these particular bones, including the bones of Mary Magdalene, are there in the tomb because they were married together. Yeah, you've heard this before, right? We're right back with the Da Vinci Code and the Gnostic Gospels. But folks, this is being played on the Discovery Channel. To join the conversation, call 877-893-8255. That's 877-893-TALK. Coast to coast and with listeners around the world, this is the Albert Mueller Program.
Listening to the Albert Mueller Program, your place for intelligent Christian conversation about the issues that matter. To get online, call toll-free 1-877-893-TALK. That's 1-877-893-8255. Or go to www.albertmueller.com. Here again is your host, Dr. Albert Mueller.
Welcome back to the Albert Mueller Program. We're talking about The Lost Tomb of Jesus, the Discovery Channel documentary that is set to air on Sunday, this coming Sunday, and then the book on which the documentary is based, The Jesus Family Tomb, which is by Simka Jakubowicz and Charles Pellegrino, the documentary being produced as executive producer by James Cameron, the producer of the Titanic. And by the way, if you're looking for a conspiracy theory, let me let you in on this one. Simka Jakubowicz, who lives in Toronto, is the host of a program on the History Channel known as The Naked Archaeologist. But Charles Pellegrino, who is his co-author of this book, now listen to this. He is the author of the book Titanic, A Ring of Bell, as in James Cameron, and the movie Titanic. He is identified in this biographical information as a forensic archaeologist, saying he has a Ph.D. in paleobiology. But it also says that he is the author of several of these other things, and including the National Geographic special, Unearthing Atlantis. So I hope you're seeing a kind of a pattern here. People who are fascinated with Atlantis and the paranormal and all the rest. By the way, Mr. Pellegrino, Dr. Pellegrino, in his section of the book, The Jesus Family Tomb, and remember, you just heard Simka Jakubowicz say they're not theologians, but they don't see a problem here. This is what Mr. Pellegrino says. He says, in any event, even a physical resurrection doesn't depend on the fact that the first tomb was empty. It depends on Jesus' appearance among the disciples. A Christian believer can believe that Jesus was removed from the first tomb, traditionally identified with a tomb under the Holy Sepulchre in Jerusalem, and laid in a second tomb. With respect to his ascension to heaven, the New Testament also does not tell us that its chroniclers believe that Jesus, when he ascended, needed to take his entire body with him. So if you believe in a physical ascension, the ossuary is a problem. But if you believe in a spiritual one, it becomes an object of veneration. End quote. Okay. Just how much nonsense can you put in one paragraph? This is like a contest, and so far, Dr. Pellegrino wins. What do you make of the sentence? Let me read it again. With respect to his ascension to heaven, the New Testament also does not tell us that its chroniclers believe that Jesus, when he ascended, listen to these words, needed to take his entire body with him. What kind of theology is that? I mean, this is so amateurish. You just have to wonder if these people actually meant to be taken seriously in putting together this book and this documentary. But they are being taken seriously. That's why we were debating the issue last night on Larry King Live. That's why you're going to be hearing a lot of it in terms of major media coverage over the next several days. And that explains why the Discovery Channel is running it. There's a commercial motivation here. This is a commercial product. They think this is going to sell. It's going to sell books. And by the way, the book itself, the more I look at it, is really an embarrassment. It's written in this sensationalistic style. Folks, if you've ever read a scientific study in terms of archaeology or any of its similar cognate fields, it doesn't read like a mystery thriller. When you read a book like this that is supposedly presenting a scientific case and it reads like a mystery thriller, and when the authors put their own words in quotation marks, you know you've got a big problem. To join the conversation, call 877-893-8255. That's 877-893-TALK. Here's my assurance to you. The New Testament is trustworthy. This documentary is not. I don't want to say that defensively as if we're just going to say, look, we're simply going to refuse to look at the evidence. No, we need to look at the evidence because we don't have to fear the evidence. There is no evidence that can ever be produced that would be in any way credible to suggest that Jesus Christ did not rise from the dead. It's impossible. Larry King asked me last night, you know, aren't you willing to consider the evidence? Well, there is no possible evidence. There is no DNA of Jesus. There is no way to identify bones in any credible way as belonging to Jesus. This is patently ridiculous, but it's getting a lot of airtime. The phone number, 877-893-8255. That's 877-893-TALK. Let's go to Tallahassee, Florida, where Roger's listening on the World Wide Web. Go ahead, Roger.
Dr. Mueller, I watched your I watched the program last night, and what do you think about the one of the other guests, the Roman Catholic sociologist, said that every time when Lent season comes around, something new comes out about Jesus, supposedly.
Well, Roger, that's Bill Donahue of the Catholic League for Religious and Civil Rights, and Bill Donahue is exactly right on that, Roger, as I think you also mean to agree by asking the question. It seems that about two times a year, not just with Easter, but also with Christmas, there come major media attacks upon the central truth claims of Christianity. You know, I dealt with this on this program with what Newsweek magazine did with Christmas just a couple years ago. ABC, NBC have done similar things at different times. Now, it just so happens, because Easter focuses primarily upon the resurrection, that it seems that this time of the year, there are people who are dead set to try to suggest scandalously that the resurrection didn't happen. Or in this case, that maybe it wasn't physical, or maybe the question doesn't even matter. Yeah, Roger, we need to brace ourselves this time of year, every year, for just this kind of development. To join the conversation, call 877-893-8255. We'll be right back. Well, here we go again. This time it's not just the Da Vinci Code or the Jesus Dynasty. It's supposedly the discovery of the Jesus Tomb in the region of Jerusalem, a tomb that was unearthed in 1980. And by the way, the claim that it was the tomb of Jesus and his family is not even new. The BBC made a documentary that presented the same claim about 10 years ago. But now Simcha Jakubowicz and James Cameron of Titanic fame have combined together to make a documentary that will be shown on the Discovery Channel on Sunday, making these claims all over again. And Jakubowicz and Charles Pellegrino have written the book, The Jesus Family Tomb. And what they claim is new is statistical analysis of the names, suggesting that even though all of these names are common, finding them together in one place is just statistically so improbable that it must be one family and only one family that would match these names. And then they claim some DNA evidence that they claim also narrows the field. Let's go to Will, calling from Largo, Florida, listening on WTBN. Go ahead, Will.
Hey, Dr. Mueller, is there more specific evidence that they have? I'd like to know if they're not professionals, what's the deal?
Well, they would claim to be professionals. They just wouldn't claim to be theologians. You might say they're professionals of a different sort. They are professional journalists, first of all. Simcha Jakubowicz is even identified in his book as an Emmy-winning documentary director and producer, published author, and lecturer. This man is not an archaeologist. You may have heard him earlier say, he's just reporting. He's just reporting. He's just a reporter. And Charles Pellegrino is identified as a paleobiologist. James Cameron is a movie producer. So what they do is they bring in experts. And by the way, Will, you certainly know how this game is played. We see it all the time. I can bring in my experts, you bring in your experts. And in their very sensationalistically written book, they talk about conversations they had, and they keep throwing in, you know, this guy teaches at Harvard, this guy teaches at Princeton, et cetera, et cetera. But there's really no context to even know what these people really said. And most of it is couched in probability or possibility. Yes, it's possible that could be true. Well, I could take that, and if I am skillful in putting together a documentary, I can make it look like the entire faculty of Harvard just signed on and said, yep, that must be true. The fact is that this is not some kind of official, standard, respectable scientific research project. This is a commercial television project. Will, you asked a question about specific evidence. Let me tell you about just some of the evidence that they talk about. For instance, with DNA, they did some DNA studies of the material found. And by the way, there's very little DNA material, but they were able, nonetheless, they claim, to use what was available in order to come up with an estimation of what's going on. And one of the things they come up with is that two of the people, and they claim one was a male and one a female, one they claim was Jesus and another claim was Mary Magdalene, were married. And what's their evidence for that? Their evidence is the fact that their DNA is not physically related. Now, let's think about that for just a moment. No two persons who do not share the same mother are going to have the same DNA. So all this proves is these persons didn't have the same mother. That's what I mean by jumping to conclusions. They very quickly jump to something else. Let's listen to clip number four. This is Simcha Yakubovich making this point last night on Larry King Live.
What they found is that Jesus, son of Joseph, buried in that tomb, and Mariamne, which is the name of Mary Magdalene, who were buried together and have been together for 2,000 years in that tomb, were not related by DNA matrilineally. So the suggestion is very strong that they, if they're in the same family tomb, that they are husband and wife.
Okay, let's just follow that again. What you have is a series of proposals made like this. It could be possible that we might understand that to mean this. This would be suggestive of another thing. And before you know it, you start piling all these statements up until it appears that you have produced a great deal of evidence and proof. But the closer you look at it, not even one little thread is conclusive. We're not even sure they're reading the names, the inscriptions on the ossuaries correctly. Some people say that it is Jesus, Jesus, which, by the way, was a name so common that almost one out of every 10 boys in Jerusalem in the time of Jesus, in Israel in the time of Jesus, was named Jesus. In this case, it is Yeshua. The Hebrew and Aramaic form goes back to Joshua, meaning Savior. Very common name, Joshua, being, of course, one of the great heroes of Israel. So what you are presented here with is what's claimed to be evidence, but really doesn't add up at all. And then the DNA evidence, you know, to me, that's just an attempt to make it sound like there's some new evidence. But, of course, this isn't evidence at all, except these two people aren't related. Well, that can't possibly be news. Will, does any of that make sense to you?
Absolutely. I would like to know what they've done about carbon dating and looking at the ossuaries specifically to make sure that they are appropriate for the time frame they're claiming they are.
Okay, now that is a very smart question, Will. I appreciate that. And in their book, they try to deal with that. As a matter of fact, even in the photo plates, they try to produce evidence showing that the patina, that is the signs of age upon the ossuaries, correctly place these ossuaries in the tomb at just about the first century. And by the way, I don't find that all that controversial. I'm pretty much willing to accept that evidence because there are thousands of these that have been found from roughly the same era. That just doesn't prove anything. I mean, if that was the burial practice at the time, which we should assume that most of what's found are going to be those buried at the time. And, you know, if you've been to Jerusalem, you know there are different strata, the different levels of the city. You can kind of follow it just given as the city was built up over time. That's one of the ways you can track this. But, Will, you ask that question at a very sensitive time. It's a smart question at a very strategic time because right now in Israel there is a major criminal trial going on, not a civil trial, a criminal trial, over another ossuary, in this case known as the James Ossuary. And just in the last several years, a man who was known as the most important antiquities dealer in Israel supposedly found this ossuary that said James, the brother of Jesus. And the accusation before the court in Israel right now is that the name James was originally on the ossuary, but someone much later, and what the criminal court is considering is as late as several years ago, went on to write brother of Jesus. Now, the fact that many archaeologists in Israel have already dismissed the James ossuary and saying it's a fraud doesn't seem to impress Simcha Yakubovich, because he's still holding that one's true, too. And it's because I think a lot of their sources are common, and he's pretty much got to hold on to that without undermining the case for what he calls the lost tomb of Jesus. Thanks for your call, Will. You know, when you look at a question like this, one of the things you need to ask is, where are the people who have no commercial stake in this who might be supporting this kind of claim? Where are the people who are willing to put their scientific reputation on the line? You're going to find that to be a very small list. There are a lot of people quoted in the book, but they're not coming up to testify about it. We'll be right back. There is so much more to talk about here. I wish we had time to talk about James Tabor's book, The Jesus Dynasty. He appeared on Larry King Live as an authority. And one of the things I think I was able to do is to demonstrate that he's changing his tune. Just in the publication of his own book, he suggested a very different scenario. Now he's appearing in apparent support of this one. Just just look at all of this with an appropriately skeptical eye and demand, where's the evidence, and look at it carefully. But the big question, of course, is not about the ossuaries. It's not about the archaeology. It's about the theology. And the big question is, just how important is the resurrection? I want you to hear something from the Discovery Channel special that is going to air on Sunday. This is John Dominic Cresson on the issue of the resurrection.
If the bones of Jesus were to be found in an ossuary in Jerusalem tomorrow, and without doubt, let's say they are definitely agreed to be the bones of Jesus, would that destroy Christian faith? It certainly would not destroy my Christian faith. I leave what happens to bodies up to God.
Well, that sounds so very poetic. I leave what happens to bodies up to God, except God has told us what happened to this body. He has told us that Jesus Christ was raised from the dead, a bodily resurrection, to the extent that the Apostle Paul said, if Christ is not raised, then we are of all men most to be pitied, for we are still dead in our trespasses and sins. Mr. King asked me about this last night, and this will serve as a very interesting bookend to what Dr. Cresson had to say.
What effect could this have on your church?
Well, Larry, the one true thing that we have to affirm here is that if it ever could be proved that Jesus Christ did not rise from the dead, if the resurrection was a fraud, then Christianity falls. Now, I went on after that to say, but there is no evidence that could ever be adduced, produced, could be brought before us that would ever make that point, because it is impossible for anyone to prove that any body, any bones, any tomb is actually the tomb, the body, or the bones of Jesus. But let's be really clear. Christianity stands or falls on the resurrection, the bodily resurrection of Jesus Christ from the dead. According to the scriptural testimony, it is the resurrection of Christ from the dead that demonstrates his victory over sin. It is a part of the work that Christ accomplished on our behalf. It is a part of the very source and ground of our salvation. Take out the resurrection, and we are still dead in our trespasses and sins. Now, what about the ascension? You see, you have the people making this documentary say, well, maybe we had a physical resurrection and a spiritual ascension. We're simply not left with that option. We are told that Jesus Christ was no longer with them. We're not told that his spirit went up to heaven, but that he bodily ascended into heaven. We're also told that even there, he now sits at the right hand of God the Father Almighty, and from there he will return to claim his church. Folks, here again, the big question is, are you going to trust the Bible? Or are you going to trust, let's just say a team headed by the producer of the Titanic in order to figure out what you believe about the biggest question of life? I think you'll settle that question the right way. I hope so. We'll see you tomorrow for Ask Anything Wednesday. I'm Albert Mohler.
Thanks for listening, and be sure to visit our website, www.albertmohler.com. You'll find archives of past shows and other important resources. You can also email your questions and comments. That's www.albertmohler.com. Be sure to join us next time for the Albert Mohler Program, your place for intelligent Christian conversation about the issues that matter.